threw his head back, releasing a howl of triumph that lifted the hair on my arms. Mal and I drew apart, gazing at the crewmen yipping and laughing around us. I knew we were both thinking the same thing. Just what had we gotten ourselves into? Chapter 5. We slumped back against the railing and scooted down until we were seated beside each other, exhausted and dazed. We'd escaped the Darkling, but we were on a strange ship, surrounded by a bunch of crazed Grisha, dressed as sailors and howling like mad dogs. "You all right?" Mal asked. I nodded. The wound in my shoulder felt like it was on fire, but I was unhurt, and my whole body was thrumming from using my power again. "You?" I asked. "Not a scratch on me," Mal said in disbelief. The ship rode the waves at seemingly impossible speed, driven forward by squallers and what I realized were tide makers. As the terror and thrill of the battle receded, I noticed I was soaked. My teeth began to chatter. Mal put his arm around me, and at some point, one of the crew dropped a blanket over us. Finally, Sturmhahn called a halt and ordered the sails trimmed. The squallers and tide makers dropped their arms and fell against each other, completely spent. Their power had left their faces glowing, their eyes alight. The schooner slowed until it rocked gently in what suddenly seemed like an overwhelming silence. "Keep a watch," Sturmhahn commanded. And Privyet sent a sailor up into the shrouds with a long glass. Mal and I slowly got to our feet. Sturmhahn walked down the row of exhausted Etherealkai, clapping squallers and tide-makers on the back and saying quiet words to a few of them. I saw him directing injured sailors below decks, where I assumed they'd be seen by a ship's surgeon or maybe a Corporalkai healer. The privateer seemed to have every kind of Grisha in his employ. Then Sturmhahn strode toward me, pulling a knife from his belt. My hands went up and Mal stepped in front of me, leveling his rifle at Sturmhahn's chest. Instantly I heard swords being drawn and pistols cocking all around us as the crew drew their weapons. "Easy, Oretsev," Sturmhahn said, his step slowing. "I've just gone to a lot of trouble and expense to put you on my ship. Be ashamed to fill you full of holes now." He flipped the knife over, offering the hilt to me. "This is for the beast." The sea whip. In the excitement of the battle, I'd almost forgotten. Mal hesitated, then cautiously lowered his rifle. "Stand down," Sturmhahn instructed his crew. They holstered their pistols and put up their swords. Sturmhahn nodded to Tamar. "Haul it in." On Tamar's orders, a group of sailors leaned over the starboard rail and unlashed the complex webbing of ropes. They heaved and slowly raised the sea whip's body over the schooner's side. It thumped to the deck, still struggling weakly in the silvery confines of the net. It gave a vicious thrash, its huge teeth snapping. We all jumped back. "As I understand it, you have to be the one," said Sturmhahn, holding the knife out to me once more. I eyed the privateer, wondering how much he might know about amplifiers, and this amplifier in particular. "Go on," he said. "We need to get moving. The Darkling ship is disabled, but it won't stay that way." The blade in Sturmhahn's hand gleamed dully in the sun. Grisha steel. Somehow I wasn't surprised. Still, I hesitated.
"I just lost 13 good men," Sturmhahn said quietly. "Don't tell me it was all for nothing."
I looked at the sea whip. It lay twitching on the deck, air fluttering through its gills, its red eyes cloudy, but still full of rage. I remembered the stag's dark, steady gaze,
the quiet panic of its final moments. The stag had lived so long in my imagination that when it had finally stepped from the trees and into the snowy glade, it had been almost familiar to me, known. The sea-whip was a stranger, more myth than reality, despite the sad and solid truth of its broken body. "Either way, it won't survive," the privateer said. I grasped the knife's hilt. It felt heavy in my hand. Is this mercy? It certainly wasn't the same mercy I had shown Morozova's stag. Rosalia, the cursed prince, guardian of the Bone Road. In the stories, he lured lonely maidens onto his back and carried them laughing over the waves until they were too far from shore to cry for help. Then he dove down, dragging them beneath the surface to his underwater palace. The girls wasted away, for there was nothing to eat there but coral and pearls. Rosalia wept and sang his mournful song over their bodies, then returned to the surface to claim another queen. Just stories, I told myself. It's not a prince, just an animal in pain. The sea-whip's sides heaved. It snapped its jaws uselessly in the air. Two harpoons extended from its back, watery blood trickling from the wounds. I held up the knife, unsure of what to do, where to put the blade. My arms shook. The sea-whip gave a wheezing, pitiful sigh, a weak echo of that magical choir. Mal strode forward. "End it, Alina," he said hoarsely. "For saint's sake." He pulled the knife from my grip and dropped it to the deck. He took hold of my hands and closed them over the shaft of one of the harpoons. With one clean thrust, we drove it home. The sea-whip shuddered and then went still, its blood pooling on the deck. Mal looked down at his hands, then wiped them on his torn shirt and turned away. Tolia and Tamar came forward. My stomach churned. I knew what had to come next. "That isn't true," said a voice in my head. "You can walk away. Leave it be." Again, I had the sense that things were moving too fast. But I couldn't just throw an amplifier like this back into the sea. The dragon had already given up its life. And taking the amplifier didn't necessarily mean that I would use it. The sea-whip scales were an iridescent white that shimmered with soft rainbows, except for a single strip that began between its large eyes and ran over the ridge of its skull into its soft mane. Those were edged in gold. Tamar slid a dagger from her belt and, with Tolia's help, worked the scales free. I didn't let myself look away. When they were done, they handed me 7 perfect scales, still wet with blood. "Let us bow our heads for the men lost today," Sturmhans said. "Good sailors, good soldiers. Let the sea carry them to safe harbor, and may the saints receive them on a brighter shore." He repeated the sailor's prayer in Kurch. Then Tamar murmured the words in Shu. For a moment we stood on the rocking ship, heads bent. A lump rose in my throat. More men dead, and another magical ancient creature gone, its body desecrated by Grisha steel. I laid my hand on the sea-whip's shimmering hide. It was cool and slick beneath my fingers. Its red eyes were cloudy and blank. I gripped the golden scales in my palm, feeling their edges dig into my flesh. What saints waited for creatures like this? A long minute passed, and then Sturmhan murmured,
"Saints receive them."
"Saints receive them," replied the crew.
"We need to move," Sturmhan said quietly. "The whaler's hull was cracked, but the Darkling has squallers and a fabricator or two. And for all I know, those monsters of his can be trained to use a hammer and nails. Let's not take any chances."
He turned to Privyet.
Give the squallers a few minutes to rest, and get me a damage report, then make sail.
Da, Capitan. Privyet responded crisply. He hesitated.
Capitan, could be people will pay good money for dragon scales, no matter the color.
Sturmhan frowned, but then gave a terse nod.
Take what you want, then clear the deck and get us moving. You have our coordinates.
Several of the crew fell on the sea whip's body to cut away its scales. This I couldn't watch. I turned my back on them, my gut in knots. Sturmhand came up beside me.
Don't judge them too harshly, he said, glancing over his shoulder.
It's not them I'm judging, I said. You're the captain.
And they have purses to fill, parents and siblings to feed. We just lost nearly half our crew and took no rich prize to ease the sting. Not that you aren't fetching.
What am I doing here? I asked. Why did you help us?
Are you so sure I have?
Answer the question, Sturmhand, said Mal, joining us. Why hunt the sea whip, if you only meant to turn it over to Alina?
I wasn't hunting the sea whip. I was hunting you.
That's why you raised mutiny against the Darkling? I asked. To get at me?
You can't very well mutiny on your own ship.
Call it what you like, I said, exasperated. Just explain yourself.
Sturmhand leaned back and rested his elbows on the rail, surveying the deck.
As I would have explained to the Darkling had he bothered to ask, which thankfully he didn't. The problem with hiring a man who sells his honor is that you can always be outbid.
I gaped at him. You betrayed the Darkling for money?
Betrayed seems a strong word. I hardly know the fellow.
You're mad, I said. You know what he can do. No prize is worth that.
Sturmhan grinned.
That remains to be seen.
The Darkling will hunt you for the rest of your days.
Then you and I will have something in common, won't we? Besides, I like to have powerful enemies. Makes me feel important.
Mal crossed his arms and considered the privateer.
I can't decide if you're crazy or stupid.
I have so many good qualities, Sturman said.
It can be hard to choose.
I shook my head. The privateer was out of his mind. If the Darkling was outbid, then who hired you? Where are you taking us?
First, answer a question for me, Sturmhan said, reaching into his frock coat.
He drew a little red volume from his pocket and tossed it to me.
Why was the Darkling carrying this around with him? He doesn't strike me as the religious type.
I caught it and turned it over, but I already knew what it was. Its gold lettering sparkled in the sun.
You stole it? I asked.
And a number of other documents from his cabin. Although, again, since it was technically my cabin, I'm not sure you can call it theft.
Technically, I observed in irritation, the cabin belongs to the whaling captain you stole the ship from.
Fair enough, admitted Sturmhand. If this whole sun summoner thing doesn't work out, you might consider a career as a barrister. You seem to have the carping disposition. But I should point out that this actually belongs to you.
He reached out and flipped the book open. My name was inscribed in the cover. Alina Starkov. I tried to keep my face blank, but my mind was suddenly racing. This was my Istori Sanctia, the very copy the apparat had given to me months ago in the library of the Little Palace. The Darkling would have had my room searched after I fled Os Alta. But why take this book? And why had he been so concerned that I might have read it? I thumbed through the pages. The volume was beautifully illustrated, though given that it was meant for children, it was awfully gruesome. Some of the saints were depicted performing miracles or act of charity. Sankt Felix, among the apple boughs. Sancta Anastasia, riding arquesque of the wasting plague. But most of the pages showed the saints in their martyrdoms. Sancta Elisabetta, being drawn and quartered, the beheading of Sankt Lubov, Sankt Ilya in chains. I froze. This time I could not disguise my reaction.
Interesting, no? said Sturmhand.
He tapped the page with one long finger.
Unless I'm very much mistaken, that's the creature we just captured.
There was no hiding it. Behind Sankt Ilya, splashing around in the waves of a lake or an ocean, was the distinctive shape of the sea whip. But that wasn't all. Somehow I kept my hand from straying to the collar at my neck. I shut the book and shrugged. Just another story. Mal shot me a baffled look. I didn't know if he'd seen what was on that page. I didn't want to return the Histori Sanctia to Sturmhand, but he was already suspicious enough. I made myself hold it out to him, hoping he couldn't see the tremor in my hand. Sturmhand studied me, then levered himself up and shook out his cuffs.
Keep it. It is yours, after all. As I'm sure you've noticed, I have a deep respect for personal property. Besides, you'll need something to keep you occupied until we get to Oskervo.
Mal and I both gave a start. You're taking us to West Ravka? I asked.
I'm taking you to meet my client, and that's really all I can tell you.
Who is he? What does he want from me?
Are you so sure it's a he? Maybe I'm delivering you to the Fjorden Queen.
Are you?
No. But it's always wise to keep an open mind.
I blew out a frustrated breath. Do you ever answer a question directly?
Hard to say.
There, I've done it again. I turned to Mal, fists clenched. I'm going to kill him.
Answer the questions, Sturmhand, Mal growled.
Sturmhand lifted a brow.
Two things you should know, he said, and this time I heard that hint of steel in his voice. One, captains don't like taking orders on their own ships. Two, I'd like to offer you a deal.
Mal snorted.
Why would we ever trust you? You don't have much choice, Sturmhand said pleasantly. I'm well aware that you could sink this ship and consign us all to the watery deep. But I hope you'll take your chances with my client. Listen to what he has to say. If you don't like what he proposes, I swear to help you make your escape. Take you anywhere in the world.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. So you crossed the Darkling, and now you're going to turn right around and betray your new client too?
Not at all, said Sturmhand, genuinely affronted. My client paid me to get you to Ravka, not to keep you there. That would be extra.
I looked at Mal. He lifted a shoulder and said,
He's a liar and probably insane. But he's also right. We don't have much choice.
I rubbed my temples. I felt a headache coming on. I was tired and confused. And Sturmhand had a way of talking that made me want to shoot someone, preferably him. But he'd freed us from the Darkling, and once Mal and I were off his ship, we might find our own way to escape. For now, I couldn't think much beyond that. All right, I said. He smiled.
So good to know you won't be drowning us all.
He beckoned a deckhand who had been hovering nearby.
Fetch Tamar, and tell her she'll be sharing her quarters with the summoner, he instructed.
Then he pointed to Mal.
He can stay with Tolya.
Before Mal could open his mouth to protest, Sturmhund forestalled him.
That's the way of things on this ship. I'm giving you both free run of the Volkvolni until we reach Ravka. But I beg you not to trifle with my generous nature. The ship has rules, and I have limits.
You and me both, Mal said through gritted teeth.
I laid my hand on Mal's arm. I would have felt safer staying together, but this wasn't the time to quibble with a privateer.
Let it go, I said. I'll be fine.
Mal scowled, then turned on his heel and strode across the deck, disappearing into the ordered chaos of rope and sail. I took a step after him.
Might want to leave him alone, Sturmhund said. That type needs plenty of time for brooding and self-recrimination. Otherwise, they get cranky.
Do you take anything seriously?
Not if I can help it. Makes life so tedious.
I shook my head.
This client... Don't bother asking. Needless to say, I've had plenty of bitters. You're in very high demand since you disappeared from the fold. Of course, most people think you're dead. Tends to drive the price down. Try not to take it personally.
I looked across the deck to where the crew were hefting the Sea Whip's body over the ship's rail. With a straining heave, they rolled it over the side of the schooner. It struck the water with a loud splash. That quickly, Rosalia was gone, swallowed by the sea. A long whistle blew. The crewmen scattered to their stations, and the squallers took their places. Seconds later, the sails bloomed like great white flowers. The schooner was once more on its way, tacking southeast to Ravka, to home.
"What are you going to do with those scales?" Sturmhund asked.
"I don't know."
"Don't you? Despite my dazzling good looks, I'm not quite the petty fool I appear to be. The Darkling intended for you to wear the Sea Whip scales."
So why didn't he kill it? When the Darkling had murdered the stag and placed Moritzova's collar around my neck, he'd bound us forever.
I shivered, remembering the way he had reached across that connection, seizing hold of my power as I stood by, helpless. Would the dragon scales have given him the same control? And if so, why not take it?
I already have an amplifier, I said.
A powerful one, if the stories are true.
The most powerful amplifier the world had ever known, so the Darkling had told me. And so I'd believed. But what if there was more to it? What if I'd only touched the beginnings of the stag's power? I shook my head. That was madness.
Amplifiers can't be combined.
I saw the book, he replied. It certainly looks like they can.
I felt the weight of the Istori Sanctia in my pocket. Had the Darkling feared I might learn Moritzova's secrets from the pages of a children's book?
You don't understand what you're saying, I told Sturmhund. No Grisha has ever taken a second amplifier. The risks...
Now that's the word best not used around me. I tend to be overfond of risk.
Not this kind, I said grimly.
Pity, he murmured. If the Darkling catches up to us, I doubt this ship or this crew will survive another battle. A second amplifier might even the odds. Better yet, give us an edge. I do so hate a fair fight.
Or it could kill me, or sink the ship, or create another shadow fold, or worse.
You certainly have a flair for the dire.
My finger snaked into my pocket, seeking out the damp edges of the scales. I had so little information, and my knowledge of Grisha theory was sketchy at best. But this rule had always seemed fairly clear. One Grisha, one amplifier. I remembered the words from one of the convoluted philosophy texts I'd been required to read. Why can a Grisha possess but one amplifier? I will answer this question instead. What is infinite? The universe and the greed of men. I needed time to think. Will you keep your word? I said at last. Will you help us escape? I didn't know why I bothered asking. If he intended to betray us, he certainly wouldn't say so. I expected him to reply with some kind of joke, so I was surprised when he said, "Are you so eager to leave your country behind once again?" I stilled. "All the while, your country suffers." The Darkling had accused me of abandoning Ravka. He was wrong about a lot of things, but I couldn't help feeling that he was right about that. I'd left my country to the mercy of the Shadowfold, to a weak king and grasping tyrants like the Darkling and the Apparat. Now, if the rumors could be believed, the Fold was expanding and Ravka was falling apart because of the Darkling. Because of the collar. Because of me. I lifted my face to the sun, feeling the rush of sea air over my skin, and said, "I'm eager to be free."
"As long as the Darkling lives, you'll never be free, and neither will your country. You know that."
I considered the possibility that Sturmhand was greedy or stupid. But it hadn't occurred to me that he might actually be a patriot. He was Ravkin, after all. And even if his exploits had lined his own pockets, they'd probably done more to help his country than all of the feeble Ravkin navy. "I want the choice," I said.
"You'll have it," he replied. "On my word, as a liar and cutthroat."
He set off across the deck, but then turned back to me.
"You are right about one thing, Summoner. The Darkling is a powerful enemy. You might want to think about making some powerful friends."
I wanted nothing more than to pull the copy of the Istori Sanctia from my pocket and spend an hour studying the illustration of Sankt Ilya, but Tamar was already waiting to escort me to her quarters. Sturmhan's schooner wasn't at all like the sturdy merchant ship that had carried Mal and me to Novia Zem, or the clunky whaler we'd just left behind. It was sleek, heavily armed, and beautifully built. Tamar told me that he'd captured the schooner from a Zemini pirate who was picking off Ravkin ships near the ports of the southern coast. Sturmhand had liked the vessel so much that he'd taken it for his own flagship and renamed it Volkvolni. Wolf of the Waves. Wolves. Stormhound. The red dog on the ship's flag. At least I knew why the crew were always howling and yapping. Every inch of space on the schooner was put to use. The crew slept on the gun deck. In case of engagement, their hammocks could be quickly stowed, and the cannon slotted into place. I'd been right about the fact that, with Corporal Kai on board, there was no need for an Atkazatsia surgeon. The doctor's quarters and supply room had been turned into Tamar's berth. The cabin was tiny, with barely enough room for two hammocks and a chest. The walls were lined with cupboards filled of unused ointments and salves, arsenic powder, tincture of lead antimony. I balanced carefully in one of the hammocks, my feet resting on the floor, acutely conscious of the red book tucked inside my coat, as I watched Tamar throw open the lid of her trunk and begin divesting herself of weapons. The brace of pistols that crossed her chest, two slender axes from her belt, a dagger from her boot, and another from the sheath secured around her thigh. She was a walking armory. "I feel sorry for your friend," she said, as she pulled what looked like a sock full of ball bearings from one of her pockets. It hit the bottom of the chest with a loud thunk. "Why?" I asked, making a circle on the planks with the toe of my boot. "My brother snores like a drunk bear," I laughed. "Mal snores too." "Then they can perform a duet."
She disappeared and then returned a moment later with a bucket. "The Tidemakers filled the rain barrels," she said. "Feel free to wash if you like."
Fresh water was usually a luxury aboard ship, but I suppose that with Grisha in the crew, there would be no need to ration it. She dunked her head in the bucket and ruffled her short dark hair.
"He's handsome, the tracker."
I rolled my eyes. "You don't say."
"Not my type, but handsome."
My brows shot up. In my experience, Mao was just about everyone's type. But I wasn't going to start asking Tamar personal questions. If Sturmhand couldn't be trusted, then neither could his crew, and I didn't need to grow attached to any of them. I'd learned my lesson with Jenya, and one shattered friendship was enough. Instead, I said, "There are Kirch in Sturmhand's crew. Aren't they superstitious about having a girl on board?"
"Sturmhand does things his own way."
"And they don't bother you?"
Tamar grinned, her white teeth flashing against her bronze skin. She tapped the gleaming shark's tooth hanging around her neck, and I realized it was an amplifier.
"No," she said simply.
"Ah."
Faster than I could blink, she pulled yet another knife from her sleeve.
"This comes in handy, too," she said.
"However do you choose?"
I breathed faintly.
"Depends on my mood."
Then she flipped the knife over in her hand and offered it to me.
"Sturmhand's given orders that you are to be left alone. But just in case someone gets drunk and forgetful. You do know how to take care of yourself."
I nodded.
I didn't walk around with 30 knives hidden about my person, but I wasn't completely incompetent.
She dunked her head again, then said,
"They're throwing dice above deck, and I'm ready for my ration. You can come if you like."
I didn't care much for gambling or rum, but I was still tempted. My whole body was crackling with the feeling of using my power against the Nichi Voya. I was restless and positively famished for the first time in weeks. But I shook my head.
"No thanks."
"Suit yourself. I have debts to collect.
Priviet wagered we wouldn't be coming back.
I swear he looked like a mourner at a funeral when we came over that rail."
"He bet you'd be killed?"
I said, aghast. She laughed.
"I don't blame him. To go up against the Darkling and his Grisha? Everyone knew it was suicide. The crew ended up drawing straws to see who got stuck with the honor."
"And you and your brother are just unlucky?"
"Us?"
Tamar paused in the doorway. Her hair was damp, and the lamplight glinted off her heartrender's grin.
"We didn't draw anything," she said as she stepped through the door. "We volunteered."
I didn't have a chance to talk to Mal alone until late that night. We'd been invited to dine with Sturmhand in his quarters, and it had been a strange supper. The meal was served by the steward, a servant of impeccable manners, who was several years older than anyone else on the ship. We ate better than we had in weeks, fresh bread, roasted haddock, pickled radishes, and a sweet iced wine that set my head spinning after just a few sips. My appetite was fierce, as it always was after I'd used my power. But Mal ate little and said less, until Sturmhand mentioned the shipment of arms he was bringing back to Ravka. Then he seemed to perk up, and they spent the rest of the meal talking about guns, grenades, and exciting ways to make things explode. I couldn't seem to pay attention. As they yammered on about the repeating rifles used on the Zemini frontier, all I could think about were the scales in my pocket and what I intended to do with them. Did I dare claim a second amplifier for myself? I had taken the Sea Whip's life. This meant its power belonged to me. But if the scales functioned like Moritzova's collar, then the dragon's power was also mine to bestow. I could give the scales to one of Sturmhan's heartrenders, maybe even Tolia. Try to take control of him, the way the Darkling had once taken control of me. I might be able to force the privateer to sail us back to Novia Zem. But I had to admit, that wasn't what I wanted. I took another sip of wine. I needed to talk to Mal. To distract myself, I catalogued the trappings of Sturmhahn's cabin. Everything was gleaming wood and polished brass. The desk was littered with charts, the pieces of a dismembered sextant, and strange drawings of what looked like the hinged wing of a mechanical bird. The table glittered with Kirch porcelain and crystal. The wines bore labels in a language I didn't recognize. All plunder, I realized. Sturmhond had done well for himself. As for the captain, I took the opportunity to really look at him for the first time. He was probably 4 or 5 years older than I was, and there was something very odd about his face. His chin was overly pointy. His eyes were a muddy green, his hair a peculiar shade of red. His nose looked like it had been broken and badly set several times. At one point he caught me studying him, and I could have sworn he turned his face away from the light. When we finally left Sturmhahn's cabin, it was past midnight. I herded Mal above deck to a secluded spot by the ship's prow. I knew there were men on watch, in the foretop above us, but I didn't know when I'd have another chance to get him alone.
"I like him," Mal was saying, a little unsteady on his feet from the wine. "I mean, he talks too much, and he'd probably steal the buttons from your boots, but he's not a bad guy. And he seems to know a lot about..."
"Would you shut up?" I whispered. "I want to show you something."
Mal peered at me blearily. "No need to be rude." I ignored him and pulled the red book out of my pocket.
"Look," I said, holding the page open and casting a glow over Sankt Ilya's exultant face. Mal went still.
"The stag," he said. "And Rusalia."
I watched him examine the illustration and saw the moment that realization struck.
"Saints," he breathed. "There's a third."
Chapter 6. Sankt Ilya stood barefoot on the shore of a dark sea. He wore the ragged remnants of a purple robe, his arms outstretched, his palms turned upward. His face had the blissful, placid expression saints always seem to wear in paintings, usually before they were murdered in some horrific way. Around his neck, he wore an iron collar that had once been connected to the heavy fetters around his wrists by thick chains. Now the chains hung broken by his sides. Behind Sankt Ilya, a sinuous white serpent splashed in the waves. A white stag lay at his feet, gazing out at us with dark, steady eyes. But neither of these creatures held our attention. Mountains crowded the background behind the saint's left shoulder, and there, barely visible in the distance, a bird circled a towering stone arch. Mal's fingers traced its long tail feathers, rendered in white, and the same pale gold that illuminated Sankt Ilya's halo.
"It can't be," he said.
"The stag was real. So was the sea whip.
But this is different."
He was right. The firebird didn't belong to one story, but to 1,000. It was at the heart of every Ravkin myth, the inspiration for countless plays and ballads, novels and operas. Ravka's borders were said to have been sketched by the firebird's flight. Its rivers ran with the firebird's tears. Its capital was said to have been founded where a firebird's feather fell to earth. A young warrior had picked up that feather and carried it into battle. No army had been able to stand against him, and he became the first king of Ravka. Or so the legend went. The firebird was Ravka. It was not meant to be brought down by a tracker's arrow.
its bones worn for the greater glory of some upstart orphan.
Sankt Ilya, Mal said. Ilya Moritsova.
A Grecian saint?
I touched the tip of my finger to the page, to the collar, to the two fetters on Moritsova's wrists. Three amplifiers. Three creatures. And we have two of them.
Mal gave his head a firm shake, probably trying to clear away the haze of wine. Abruptly, he shut the book. For a second I thought he might throw it into the sea, but then he handed it back to me.
What are we supposed to do with this? He said.
He sounded almost angry. I'd thought about that all afternoon, all evening, throughout that interminable dinner, my fingers straying to the sea whip's scales again and again, as if anxious for the feel of them.
Mal, Sturmhand has fabricators in his crew. He thinks I should use the scales. And I think he might be right.
Mal's head snapped around.
What?
I swallowed nervously and plunged ahead.
The stag's power isn't enough, not to fight the Darkling, not to destroy the fold.
And your answer is a second amplifier?
For now?
For now? He ran a hand through his hair.
Saints, he swore.
You want all three.
You want to hunt the Firebird.
I felt suddenly foolish, greedy, even a little ridiculous.
The illustration.
It's just a picture, Alina, he whispered furiously.
It's a drawing by some dead monk.
But what if it's more? The Darkling said Moritsova's amplifiers were different, that they were meant to be used together.
So now you're taking advice from murderers?
No, but...
Did you make any other plans with the Darkling while you were holed up together below decks?
We weren't holed up together, I said sharply.
He was just trying to get under your skin.
Well, it worked. He gripped the ship's railing, his knuckles flexing white.
Someday, I'm going to put an arrow through that bastard's neck.
I heard the echo of the Darkling's voice. There are no others like us. I pushed it aside and reached out to lay my hand on Mal's arm.
You found the stag. And you found the sea whip. Maybe you were meant to find the Firebird, too.
He laughed outright, a rueful sound. But I was relieved to hear the bitter edge was gone.
I'm a good tracker, Alina. But I'm not that good. We need some place to start. The Firebird could be anywhere in the world.
You can do it. I know you can. Finally, he sighed and covered my hand with his own.
I don't remember anything about Sankt Ilya.
That was no surprise. There were hundreds of saints, one for every tiny village and backwater in Ravka. Besides, at Keremzin, religion was considered a peasant preoccupation. We'd gone to church only once or twice a year. My thoughts strayed to the apparat. He had given me the Istori Sanctia, but I had no way of knowing what he intended by it, or if he even knew the secret it contained.
Me neither, I said.
But that arch must mean something.
Do you recognize it?
When I'd first glanced at the illustration, the arch had seemed almost familiar, but I'd looked at countless books of maps during my training as a cartographer. My memory was a blur of valleys and monuments from Ravka and beyond. I shook my head.
No. Of course not. That would be too easy.
He released a long breath, then drew me closer, studying my face in the moonlight. He touched the collar at my neck.
Alina, he said, how do we know what these things will do to you?
We don't, I admitted.
But you want them anyway. The stag, the sea whip, the Firebird. I thought of the surge of exultation that had come from using my power in the battle against the Darkling's horde. The way my body fizzed and thrummed when I wielded the cut. What might it feel like to have that power doubled, trebled? The thought made me dizzy. I looked up at the star-filled sky. The night was velvety black and strewn with jewels. The hunger struck me suddenly. I want them, I thought. All that light, all that power. I want it all. A restless shiver moved over me. I ran my thumb down the spine of the Istore Sanctia. Was my greed making me see what I wanted to see? Maybe it was the same greed that had driven the Darkling so many years ago, the greed that had turned him into the black heretic and torn Ravka in two. But I couldn't escape the truth that without the amplifiers, I was no match for him. Mal and I were low on options. We need them, I said. All three. If we ever want to stop running. If we ever want to be free. Mal chased the line of my throat, the curve of my cheek. And all the while he held my gaze. I felt like he was looking for an answer there, but when he finally spoke, he just said, "All right." He kissed me once, gently. And though I tried to ignore it, there was something mournful in the brush of his lips. I didn't know if I was eager or simply afraid I'd lose my nerve, but we ignored the late hour and went to Sturmhund that night. The privateer greeted our request with his usual good cheer, and Mal and I returned to the deck to wait beneath the mizzenmast. A few minutes later, the captain appeared, a Materialnik in tow. With her hair in braids and yawning like a sleepy child, she didn't look very impressive, but if Sturmhund said she was his best fabricator, I had to take him at his word. Tolia and Tamar trailed behind, carrying lanterns to help the fabricator at her work. If we survived whatever came next, everyone aboard the Volkvolni would know about the second amplifier. I didn't like it, but there was nothing to be done about it. "Evening all," said Sturmhund, slapping his hands together, seemingly oblivious to our somber mood. "Perfect night for tearing a hole in the universe, no?" I scowled at him and slipped the scales from my pocket. I'd rinsed them in a bucket of seawater, and they gleamed golden in the lamplight. "Do you know what to do?" I asked the fabricator. She had me turn and show her the back of the collar. I'd only ever glimpsed it in mirrors, but I knew the surface must be near perfect. Certainly my fingers had never been able to detect any seam where David had joined the two pieces of antler together. I handed the scales to Mal, who held one out to the fabricator.
"Are you sure this is a good idea?" she asked.
She was gnawing on her lips so aggressively, I thought she might draw blood.
"Of course not," said Sturmhund. "Anything worth doing always starts as a bad idea."
The fabricator plucked the scale from Mal's fingers and rested it against my wrist, then held out her hand for another. She bent to her work. I felt the heat first, radiating from the scales as their edges began to come apart and then reform. One after another they melded together, fusing into an overlapping row as the fetter grew around my wrist. The fabricator worked in silence, her hands moving infinitesimal degrees. Tolia and Tamar kept the lamp steady, their faces so still and solemn, they might have been icons themselves. Even Sturmhund had gone quiet. Finally, the two ends of the cuff were nearly touching, and only one scale remained. Mal stared down at it, cupped in his palm.
"Mal," I said.
He didn't look at me, but touched one finger to the bare skin of my wrist, the place where my pulse beat, where the fetter would close. Then he handed the last scale to the fabricator. In moments, it was done. Sturmhund peered at the glittering cuff of scales.
"Huh," he murmured. I thought the end of the world would be more exciting.
Stand back, I said. The group shuffled over to the rail. You too, I told Mal. Reluctantly, he complied. I saw Privyet peering at us from his place by the wheel. Above, the ropes creaked as the men on watch craned their necks to get a better view. I took a deep breath. I had to be careful. No heat, just light. I wiped my damp palms on my coat and spread my arms. Almost before I'd formed the call, the light was rushing toward me. It came from every direction, from a million stars, from a sun still hidden below the horizon. It came with relentless speed and furious intent. Oh, saints, I had time to whisper. Then the light was blazing through me and the night came apart. The sky exploded into brilliant gold. The surface of the water glittered like a massive diamond, reflecting piercing white shards of sunlight. Despite my best intentions, the air shimmered with heat. I closed my eyes against the brightness, trying to focus, to regain control. I heard Bagra's harsh voice in my head, demanding that I trust my power. It isn't an animal that shies away from you or chooses whether or not to come when you call it. But this was like nothing I'd felt before. It was an animal, a creature of infinite fire that breathed with the stag's strength and the sea-whip's wrath. It coursed through me, stealing my breath, breaking me up, dissolving my edges until all I knew was light. Too much, I thought in desperation, and at the same time all I could think was more. From somewhere far away I heard voices shouting. I felt the heat billowing around me, lifting my coat, singeing the hair on my arms. I didn't care. Alina! I felt the ship rocking as the sea began to crackle and hiss. Alina! Suddenly Mal's arms were around me, pulling me back. He held me in a crushing grip, his eyes shut tight against the blaze around us. I smelled sea salt and sweat and beneath it, his familiar scent, kerimsen, meadow grass, the dark green heart of the woods. I remembered my arms, my legs, the press of my ribs, as he held me tighter, piecing me back together. I recognized my lips, my teeth, my tongue, my heart, and those new things that were a part of me, collar and fetter. They were bone and breath, muscle and flesh. They were mine. Does the bird feel the weight of its wings? I inhaled, felt sense return. I didn't have to take hold of the power. It clung to me as if it were grateful to be home. In a single glorious burst, I released the light. The bright sky fractured, letting the night back in, and all around us, sparks fell like fading fireworks, a dream of shining petals blown loose from a thousand flowers. The heat relented. The sea calmed. I drew the last scraps of light together and wove them into a soft sheen that pulsed over the deck of the ship. Sturmhand and the others were crouched by the railing, their mouths open in what might have been awe or fear. Mal had me crushed to his chest, his face pressed to my hair, his breath coming in harsh gasps. "Mal?" I said quietly. He clutched me tighter. I squeaked. "Mal? I can't breathe." Slowly he opened his eyes and looked down at me. I dropped my hands, and the light disappeared entirely. Only then did he ease his grip. Tolia lit a lamp, and the others got to their feet. Sturmhand dusted off the gaudy folds of his teal coat. The fabricator looked like she was going to be sick, but it was harder to read the twins' faces. Their golden eyes were alight with something I couldn't name.
"Well, summoner," said Sturmhand, a slight wobble to his voice. "You certainly know how to put on a show." Mal bracketed my face with his hands. He kissed my brow, my nose, my lips, my hair. Then drew me tight against him once again. "You're all right," he asked. His voice was rough. "Yes," I replied.
But that wasn't quite true. I felt the collar at my throat, the pressure of the fetter at my wrist. My other arm felt naked. I was incomplete. Sturmhand roused his crew, and we were well on our way as dawn broke. We couldn't be sure how far the light I'd created might have stretched, but there was a good chance I'd given away our location. We needed to move fast. Every crewman wanted to look at the second amplifier. Some were wary, others just curious. But Mal was the one I was worried about. He watched me constantly, as if he was afraid that at any moment I might lose control. When dusk fell, and we went below decks, I cornered him in one of the narrow passageways.
"I'm fine," I said.
"Really?
How do you know?"
"I just do. I can feel it."
"You didn't see what I saw. It was..."
"It got away from me. I didn't know what to expect."
He shook his head. "You were like a stranger, Alina. Beautiful," he said.
"Terrible." "It won't happen again. The fetter is a part of me now, like my lungs or my heart."
"Your heart," he said flatly.
I took his hand in mine and pressed it against my chest. "It's still the same heart, Mal. It's still yours."
I lifted my other hand and cast a soft tide of sunlight over his face. He flinched. "He can never understand your power, and if he does, he will only come to fear you."
I pushed the Darkling's voice from my mind. Mal had every right to be afraid. "I can do this," I said gently.
He shut his eyes and turned his face toward the sunlight that radiated from my hand. Then he tilted his head, resting his cheek against my palm. The light glowed warm against his skin. We stood that way, in silence, until the watch bell rang.
Chapter 7. The winds warmed, and the waters turned from gray to blue as the Volkvolny carried us southeast to Ravka. Sturmhan's crew was made up of sailors and rogue Grisha, who worked together to keep the ship running smoothly. Despite the stories that had spread about the power of the second amplifier, they didn't pay Mal or me much attention, though they occasionally came to watch me practice at the schooner's stern. I was careful, never pushing too hard, always summoning at noon when the sun was high in the sky, and there was no chance of my efforts being spotted. Mal was still wary, but I'd spoken the truth. The Sea Whip's power was a part of me now. It thrilled me. It buoyed me. I didn't fear it. I was fascinated by the rogues. They all had different stories. One had an aunt who had spirited him away rather than let him be turned over to the Darkling. Another had deserted the Second Army. Another had been hidden in a root cellar when the Grisha examiners arrived to test her. "My mother told them I'd been killed by the fever that had swept through our village the previous spring," the Tidemaker said. "The neighbors cut my hair and passed me off as their dead Otkazatsya son until I was old enough to leave."
Tolya and Tamar's mother had been a Grisha stationed on Ravka's southern border when she met their father, a Shuhan mercenary.
"When she died," Tamar explained, "she made my father promise not to let us be drafted into the Second Army. We left for Novi Zem the next day." Most rogue Grisha ended up in Novi Zem. Aside from Ravka, it was the only place where they didn't have to fear being experimented on by shoe doctors or burned by Fjärden witch hunters. Even so, they had to be cautious about displaying their power. Grisha were valued slaves, and less scrupulous Kurch traders were known to round them up and sell them in secret auctions. These were the very threats that had led so many Grisha to take refuge in Ravka and join the Second Army in the first place. But the rogues thought differently. For them, a life spent looking over their shoulders and moving from one place to the next to avoid discovery was preferable to a life in service to the Darkling
and the Ravkin king. It was a choice I understood. After a few monotonous days on the schooner, Mal and I asked Tamar if she would show us some Zemini combat techniques.